Welcome to the Effective Data Scientist Podcast. The podcast is designed to help you improve your skills, stay focused, manage successful projects, and have fun at work. Be an effective data scientist now.
Hi, Thomas. How are you doing? So I want to introduce yourself quickly. So we are today with Thomas Nittmann, who is now a co-host of the Effective Data Scientist podcast. I'm really happy to record a bunch of episodes with him. And it's nice to talk with him because he's really experienced in data science programming in general and mostly in R programming. But please, Thomas, could you please introduce yourself for our audience?
Sure. Thank you so much, Paolo. Yeah, first of all, I'm very delighted to be now a co-host of this podcast. That's something I've been following for a while, the work that you and also Alexander have been doing. So it's exciting to be now on this side of it, so to speak. So my journey in the industry started around 4 years ago when I joined the pharmaceutical industry, working first of all at a CRO, a contract research organization. So providing services for large pharmaceutical companies. And then after a short period there, I had the pleasure of joining Roche in Basel, Switzerland, where I started off at what used to be called a statistical programmer. Nowadays, you call that data scientists with the general flow of things in the industry at large. And I spent around 3.5 years there. And just recently, I transitioned to a new role with a biotech company called Denali Therapeutics, where I'm an associate director for data science. And speaking of R, as you mentioned, that's somewhat of my passion and something I really enjoy doing. And in pharma, that didn't used to be so popular, if I think a couple of years back, but it definitely has gained a lot of traction. And some of the work that we did at Roche really paved the way for that. And I'm really excited also that in my new role, R will be a big focus. So we have a lot to talk about on that front.
Yeah. Thanks for this introduction, Thomas. And it's nice to speak with you. You are so young, but you achieved already a lot. And of course, a lot of maybe the popularity of R in pharma is probably due also to the work you did with your colleagues at Roche. It was amazing, all the webinars we listed, great stuff. So let's start now with the first episode with you. Something I'd really want to talk about, it's how to effectively structure data science projects in R, and probably not only in R, because this could be a really general episode. Everyone interested in programming will find great content for sure. So why is it important?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points to that, but probably one of the largest one is this theme of reproducible research. I think that already was a topic in previous episodes at the Effective Data Scientist. And really, if you think about it, if you run any kind of data through a data processing and analysis pipeline, at the end of the day, you want to make sure that if you hand over your code to someone else, they can not only scrutinize it, but actually run it and come to the same results. If you don't manage to do that, then in a way, you failed your job, I would say, as a data scientist. And structuring your project is one part of that. There's certainly lots of other things to that. But in the first place, if you don't have a well-structured project that someone else or also you in the future look at and can understand what happened there, you already failed on that front. So in that sense, it also becomes a way for you to keep your sanity while working on your project, because when you go in, you see something that is well structured. You maybe have set up a certain folder structure. You have your data over there, your code over there, maybe some custom functions in another bucket. And if you use that consistently across projects as well, regardless of what you're working on, you always have that consistency and can easily come to the point where you can understand things. And also, very importantly, because most of the time, people don't just work alone on that. They have collaborators, and it really facilitates working a team if you have a structure that everyone can rely on and is easily understandable. So these are just a couple of points why I think it is really important to structure your data science projects well.
This is really connected to reproducibility and probably also efficiency in how do you program, how do you create and build stuff for your company. And we have a responsibility. This is really important, both in industry and also in academia, because I found many times asking code or data to colleagues from maybe other university or from other universities or research centers in the past, and they weren't able to find the code or data anymore because, I don't know, statisticians left or for any other reason. And it's a matter of integrity in what we do and also for the value we created for our companies, because someday we may left the company and people should still work on our previous work as programmers. So it's really important. Are there some principles, or is it just important to have a kind of structure?
Yeah, maybe first of all, I think what you mentioned, when you cannot even find the code or the data that led to a certain analysis, that's obviously the worst case scenario. And hopefully it's not that bad most of the time. But I can tell you also from my experience in academia, it's certainly, even if it's somewhere there, that doesn't mean that someone else can just readily pick it up, because oftentimes it's all over the place. There is some folder where some code lives, then you have your data somewhere else. And then maybe people hard code certain file paths, starting with their C drive and then their username on the Windows machine. So even if you have the code, it just doesn't work if you put it on your computer. So there's a lot of intricacies of what can go wrong there. But if we talk about overarching principles, and maybe if we just stick on R for the time being, but later on, I think we can certainly generalize that. I think something that is invaluable is actually if you start off with using an R project. And so what does that even mean? So if you use an IDE such as RStudio, if you open that by default, you're in your user home directory, and you can certainly create scripts there, save them somewhere on your computer and have your data somewhere else. But this principle of a project is that you say, no, there is a dedicated folder for this particular analysis that I'm performing. And inside that project, then you can have a bunch of subfolders where you, for example, store your data in one folder, and you have your main analysis scripts in a second folder, and maybe your functions in a third folder. And that way, everything part of the analysis is encapsulated within that single project. So if I compress that project, which is basically just a folder on your computer, send it over to you, you can unzip it, and then you should be able to run the analysis, because everything that you need should be self-contained within there. And first of all, put everything in that project. And then the second point I already alluded to is this kind of organization. Try to not just have everything at the top level, mixing your R scripts with your data, with whatever else that you need with documentation. Instead, try to create a structure that makes sense. And certainly it helps to then also give very meaningful names to whatever you have there. So not only the folders, but also individual analysis scripts or R functions, such that even if people just quickly scan through that, they get a feeling, what is this actually all about here? And maybe to continue on that, because oftentimes when you start off a project, you just write a bunch of code and analyses. You obviously understand it at that point because it's something you did. But even if you come back a couple of months later, or even worse, probably if someone else looks at it and you don't document the way that you done things, that's really detrimental. So try to also either document your code or use something, a literate programming tool like R Markdown, Jupyter Notebooks, Python, where you intermingle a description of this, the things that I'm doing, with the actual code that does it, such that kind of documentation and code actually become one unit and are not separate from each other. And maybe something related to R again in particular is try to set up all your scripts in a way such that they do not rely on anything implicit. For example, you saved your workspace at the end of the previous session, and then you assume that some data frame that you need is already in the global environment. Because as soon as I send it over to you, Paolo, and you run that, you don't have that in your global environment. So again, it will not work. So you need to make sure that if someone starts from a blank state and runs a certain script, that it actually runs through from the top to the bottom and produces the results there. So these are just some principles, I would say. There's probably much more to mention, but I certainly think these are important ones to consider.
And what about, for example, meaningful names? Because sometimes when I program, I'd like to see clean code, and I'm trying to save space, for example, and also saving fonts, shortening names. I try to find abbreviations for all the objects I have. Maybe it's difficult to find a compromise and to have clean codes and have also meaningful names. So maybe having covariates instead of coves or X, for example, is better. I don't know. Do you have some suggestions or do you think it's not an issue?
Oh, I think it's definitely a great issue. There is this famous quote by a computer scientist, something along the lines of, there are only two hard things in computer science, and one of them is giving meaningful names to stuff. So I think that just goes to show that this is indeed a problem. And if you set the infamous X right, what the hell is X? Could be anything depending on the context. So covariates then, of course, is something better, I would say, because it's descriptive. If whatever you do is intended for like a data science statistician audience, then probably COFS is a good abbreviation, but maybe not C, just C. So there is certainly a balance you have to strike, because if you give very descriptive names, then you could end up potentially with something very long with lots of underscores in between. And probably that's too much, but then X, Y, Z, I's, J's, these kinds of things, or very, if you work on a Unix terminal and then you have commands like pwd, what is pwd? If you know that it's an abbreviation for print working directory, it makes sense. But if you use that for the first time, it's, I don't, where does this come from? What is pwd? Keep your audience in mind and be mindful that abbreviations can work, but they also can make it very hard for other people to understand. So I would say, when in doubt, err on the side of giving a bit more longer and quite explicit names.
Another topic is how to organize your functions. This could be R, could be Python. How many functions? What scope for any function? So we can write many functions with a small scope or having less functions, maybe with broader scope. I don't know. It's something which is also really challenging for me sometimes. And also how to organize functions in scripts. Like one script per function or many functions within a script?
Yeah, again, a very good question. So I think, first of all, the important thing is that you should write functions. And then the second question is of the scope. But certainly I can remember when I worked in academia and people were using languages like R or MATLAB or others, generally they had one very large script. So we're talking several thousand lines, which does everything from data ingestion, processing, analyses, creating some tables, graphs, everything in one large block, nothing modularized at all. And I think that's certainly something you want to avoid at all costs, because again, first of all, that makes it very hard to understand what is going on there. And also it's hard to maintain in a way. So try to, if there's kind of some block of logic, try to encapsulate that. Maybe first of all, just in a dedicated script. So maybe have one data ingestion script, one data processing script, and then one data analysis script. But then going further, also saying, okay, there's some stuff here that fits together. And maybe, especially if it's something that you need to do more than once inside your script, do put it in the function. So definitely feel empowered to write your own functions, put them in the dedicated folder, and then at the top of your script, source them in such that they are available. Then on the question of, how broad should the scope of your functions be? I think it's a tricky one to answer in general. As I said, first of all, write functions, that's the important point. And then I think there's certainly people who argue that the kind of functions you should write should be narrow focus, because then you can also test them, which is important at some point. And I think we'll talk about R packages in another episode. But for the, especially if you're getting started with this, just try to write 1, 2, 3, 4 functions, even if they have a fairly large scope at that point. I think that's a good starting point. And then if you see, hey, actually this function does two things, then it's probably a time to think, hey, let's separate it out into two functions, because I think that's something you want to end up at the end of the day, that a function has a particular purpose. And if you feel like, for example, it does both reading in your data and then processing it, then maybe it's to say, hey, actually that's two separate pieces of logic.
And what about managing your projects with workflow tools? Do you have any experience or suggestions for that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And the larger your project gets, I think the more important that becomes. So if you have a small analysis where you have one or two data sets, you have one script, which in the end generates a couple of plots, I don't think you need a workflow tool. But I can remember when I interviewed some people at Roche, and they had a bioinformatics background, and they were presenting on the kinds of analyses they did. It's quite elaborate. There's like a lot of steps in between their different scripts, and you somehow then want to make sure that you organize your workflows such that you can easily run all things. And also, what a lot of these workflow tools offer is to say, even if you tell it to run everything, they will actually only run the parts of the analysis that change since the last time you run the analysis. And that can be very important if you work with large data. So imagine you have to read in 10 gigabytes of raw data, then you process it and save it, and then do some analysis. So then if you change your analysis and you run everything again, you still again have to read the 10 gigabytes of raw data, even though they didn't change. But then because only the analysis script changed, these workflow tools are often smart enough to figure out, hey, the raw data didn't actually change, so we can just take the process data from there and just run the analysis again. So that also can save a huge amount of time in the development process, because you're not always forced to run everything from A to Z. Instead, you can maybe start at somewhere in the middle of the alphabet and then run it to the end.
I guess that also using a version control system is pretty important.
Yeah, definitely. So the most popular one being GitHub or GitLab, these kinds of hosting services. But regardless of what you use, I think it's always good to, if you come to a state where you accomplish something new, save it in a way, make a commit message, say, and now I achieved XYZ. And at that point, you know it works now. And then if you try to change something and actually it doesn't work, then you can always go back. I think that's really important. And especially if you have a project where you have repetitive deliverables. So let's say you're working in pharma and you're doing these annual safety reports. And then whenever you do them, you have a milestone in your repository. You can always go back to the exact state of the analysis at that point in time and can see what happened there. So overall, version control, I think, is really important. And also, again, when you start working with collaborators, having something like GitLab or GitHub, a Git hosting service, which is really built around the concept of, hey, there's multiple people working on this piece of code, that makes it so much easier, because what do you do otherwise? You send around scripts in emails and then you get to final script one, yeah. Final script one. That's not a place where you want to be.
1, 2, 3, underscore.
Yeah.
And
this time really final, whatever.
Really final. And do you have a default structure in mind when you work in a project? Then, of course, you may want to adapt the structure, but maybe by default, you have already a good project structure in mind.
Yeah, I think when you start Googling that, you will find different flavors of that. But in general, something I would propose is, first of all, you should have something like a README file where you just say, what is this all about? Because again, think about future you and also your collaborators, maybe even ones that are not within your company or academic institution just yet, but see this code 2-3 years down the road. They need something basically to enter into the project and understand what is going on there. So first of all, have this kind of README file, which documents things. Then in general, you have some kind of raw unprocessed data, which if it's in files, I would put in a separate folder and call it something like raw data or data raw. Then you would probably have some scripts. So maybe have a scripts folder. And in general, then one of the first scripts is reading in that raw data and doing some kind of processing before you actually do the analysis. And that you certainly want to save the processed data then. So then you would have a second folder for processed data. So right now we then have raw data, processed data, and your scripts folder. And then we talked about the importance of writing functions. And I find it often easier if you put the functions in a separate folder from the scripts, because then it's very clear to see this is functions. If you source these files, nothing will actually happen. It's just the definition of the functions. Whereas in the scripts folder, everything that you source in there that will actually execute some code and do logic. And then oftentimes you, at the end of the analysis, you have some kind of outputs, whether it's just a model object that you want to save, whether it's a table, some kind of data visualizations. And therefore, you should have something like an output folder, which saves the final results of your analysis.
Thanks. Very practical tips, Thomas. And we're getting to the end of the episode. Are these principles generalizable to other software?
I would certainly say so, especially if you use one of these languages, which are very popular for data science, for example, Python or Julia, which I would say for the most part are very similar to R. So for example, something that we just talked about, the folder structure, that is really nothing that is specific at all to a particular language. So you could just as well use that within your project where you use Julia or Python. Giving meaningful names, something we touched upon, is certainly something, again, that you want to do in every language. But then maybe if it's an object-oriented language that has some intricacies compared to a functional language. But again, if you take like the really 10,000-foot view of all of this, I think for the most part, the principles are the same. And then as sooner, as more as you zoom in into the specifics of a particular language, there will certainly be nuances. But I think the overarching principle of you wanting to structure your project well, such that it is suited to be reproduced by someone else and be understandable to someone else, that's really the key message, and that's the same across whatever tool you use. As long as it's a tool where you write code, I would say. If you try to do data science in a spreadsheet, which I would never recommend, then I'm not sure if you can use these kinds of recommendations.
Thanks a lot, Thomas. That was a really an interesting discussion. And I can't wait to start a new project with these principles in mind. And see you soon for the next episode.
Thank you so much, Paolo. It was a pleasure. Bye.